Welcome to Shedding Light Hunting Stories Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the average Joe and their great hunting stories. I'm your host, Travis Williams, listening to episode 176. Hey guys, welcome to the show. Hope that you are having a fantastic week. Maybe you're getting in that jolly holly jolly Christmas spirit. I know for us, me and my kids and my wife, we've seen Santa Claus about 13 times already, so that's been exciting. But just getting excited for all that and the fun. And we try not to go crazy on that. You know, we've bought our gifts and all that, and we just enjoy it. Enjoy what we consider the real meaning behind it all. Birth of a Savior, and Santa Claus comes way down the line, and so we enjoy all that fun stuff. But did want to let you know, we are selling some hats right now. There's some Richardson hats, like trucker with a mesh back. Got the 112s and 115s. We have a local business that's going to be printing these for us and putting a leather patch with our logo on them. So if you're on Shedding Light Outdoors, Instagram, Facebook, you can read about that, figure out. You know, the cost is $20, $6 for shipping if you're not a local person. And if you'd like to support the podcast, that's a great way to do it. So check those out. I was able to go out on a hunt there the other night and take my buddy Corey. His daughter Parker wanted to go out. And so put some corn in the backyard. We had one hunt before this, and it was a long hike and cold. And I'm like, I need to make it easier for this 12-year-old girl. she's not a country girl. She lives in town. And so I was like, the easiest thing to do is put out some corn in my backyard. Once again, I own 3 acres, so use that corn to get them onto my property and put her up in my kid's play set. So we got up in the kid's play set. Corey and I got behind her. Doe came in. It's facing us for 10 minutes. Finally turned. She got a shot. Hit it back, but was using some Rage hypodermics, and it left the biggest hole that I've ever seen. That deer went down over my hill. We waited. We waited about 3 hours. In fact, we went and helped my buddy Jim drag a real nice buck that he shot with his gun out. And but came back 3 hours later, and that deer had crashed, like within 70 yards. It was just the biggest amount of innards that I've ever seen left on a trail. Deer didn't have much left. And so I was glad that the deer didn't suffer, and Parker got her first deer, so that was pretty cool. But, yeah, so that's what's been going on, getting ready for Christmas. My daughter Ansley's 6, and I'm just tickled as can be because she's shooting a crossbow now on her own a little bit. I get up in the play set, lay it across the rail, have her identify the target. I flip off the safety, and she's hitting the bullseye. So I don't know that we're going to be able to make it happen this year, but just exciting that she's having fun shooting that bow and having a good time. So, and the other news is I have started shooting the recurve again. I've gotten my buddy Eric is letting me borrow a Hoyt Buffalo recurve, and pretty soon I'm going to meet with Trav Shire. We're going to get some extra arrows and get it sighted in and kind of geared toward my draw, but really enjoying it, really just having fun shooting the backyard, not going crazy, working on my form, and that's been fun. So hopefully down the road, this is kind of the first announcement. Maybe this will lead to next fall, a deer being taken with the traditional bow. So we'll see how that goes. I'm part of a bunch of different groups on Facebook, and the other day came across a guy's post and his video that just impressed me. It's a big buck, nice, awesome video. He does a great job telling the story and unpacking it. His reaction is awesome after the shot. But then I really loved how this guy was willing to share his faith and share his heart about the hunt and kind of putting things in perspective. I think he did a great job on that. And I thought, man, I need to get this guy on my show. His name is Brad Haruska, and Brad is from PA, not actually too far from me, up toward Pittsburgh. And he comes on the show today. We talk all kinds of different things, some of how he got into hunting, the story around that buck. And we kind of unpack at the end, you kind of have to hang toward the end a little bit, this concept that I've heard a lot of guys say. The tree stand is my church, or I'm going to church, and by going to church, they mean going up 20 feet in the tree stand. And so we kind of unpack that a little bit and talk about that, what that might look like and what that means, and some things that are true about that, maybe some things that we need to think a little bit more on that. So if you've ever said that phrase, I'd encourage you to keep listening, hang in there with us. You're going to get a great buck story, and then we're going to unpack that toward the end. So guys, thank you for coming back for another episode. If you ever want to come on the show, send me an email, sheddinglightod@gmail.com. With all that said, here's Brad. Well, joining me from Hermitage, PA, is Brad Haruska. Brad, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. How you doing, sir?
Good. How's everything going?
Busy night, but I'm glad to talk hunting with a buddy, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Could always talk hunting, especially with a little bit of coffee on the side too.
Oh man, you got decaf or regular over there?
Three Yetis a day of the good stuff.
Oh man, if I drink a coffee after like 5 o'clock, I'm done. I'm gonna be up till 2 a.m.
That's right. Usually all my best work is done at night. So I gotta stay motivated at night.
Nice, man. Well, Brad, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Brad Hrushka. I'm a sixth grade math teacher at a local school in Mohawk, Bessemer, PA. Been teaching for about 16 years now, which is unbelievable. I could blink and this last 16 years have just passed so quickly. I'm a father of a 7-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son who just are the best thing that ever happened to me. And I never thought about it before that, but I think like a lot of fathers out there, when you meet your child for the first time and you start to just grow and develop with them, is you can't think of life before kids. You know what I mean? I forget what it was like.
Yeah.
But no, I'm a passionate outdoorsman, a conservationist, a 24/7, 365 guy. But at the same time, I've learned through the past few years how to balance my faith, my family, and hunting so that I'm making good choices as a husband, as a father, and a son and everything. So just a lot of learning every year in and out of the woods.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I came across a post that you made on one of the groups I follow. It might've been, is it Fueled by the Outdoors? Might be, is that where it was?
Yep, I think so.
You posted a video there of your biggest buck to date, and we'll get to that story. But what kind of got me, I watched the video and it was awesome. But
I appreciate that.
You shared it, what I sent you a message afterwards, because what wasn't the coolest part to me wasn't necessarily like you shooting the biggest buck. That's awesome. But you sharing like your heart afterwards and your reaction, you sharing your faith and those kind of things in the video. I was just like, man, I got to get this guy on my show and talk to you. And so, and I noticed that you have it says Driven Purpose Outdoors. So what is Driven Purpose Outdoors?
Yes. Yeah, so, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, a group of guys and myself got together and we wanted to start filming our hunts. So I think like a lot of people, this was almost before like the YouTube, kickoff with what's going on YouTube right now. We just wanted to film our hunts, send it out, do things. And looking back on it now, we did it for all the wrong reasons. And what it is we started it as an outdoor ministry where we wanted to reach people through the outdoors, talk about our faith, share our faith with them, but also at the same time, use it as a platform to just reach as many people as we can. That's what we told ourselves. You know what I mean? We told ourselves that. Sooner or later, it turns into like, oh, let's talk to this sponsor. Let's do this sponsor. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do this. And next thing you know, the whole reason we got into it started becoming not much of a priority. We would meet weekly, do Bible devotions together, and that started to go away. And God had a funny way of humbling us quickly to say, listen, remember why you started this. And so this journey that Driven Purpose has started was taking us into many directions right now. And it's been the last 2 years that Driven Purpose has found its purpose. And it's crazy to say that, but it's sometimes we don't understand why we start things. And when we do it on our own way, we forget that God wants to use us for his way, and we have to be humble. So we were humbled quickly between not seeing deer, not getting deer on film, things like that, where it was frustrating. And God said, listen, give it to me and I'll take care of it. And it's been awesome, because when we created Driven Purpose Outdoors, we created it to talk to and touch other people. But I will tell you right now that Driven Purpose Outdoors has made me a stronger person and has done more for me than I could ever do for Driven Purpose Outdoors. So you can see how God can use things in our life to put us in different directions.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like I totally recognize that. It's sometimes you start things and you have this idea of what you want it to be, and then as time goes on, you can lose that purpose, like you said. And that's something we're always thinking about with shedding light too. I mean, that's our goal. We want to shed the light, but what does that look like? How does that work? Is it just a podcast? Is it videos? Is it people? And we're learning more and more as we go too. So I love that. That's really cool.
And also kudos to you guys too, because I have been checking out your channel and you guys do a phenomenal job with just sharing your faith, the editing behind it all. I'm very impressed with you guys, and it's just a privilege to be here talking with you tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Brad, I'm glad to have you on, man. Hey, I want to dive into your hunting background a little bit. Tell us, you're from PA, so
yep.
Give us a little bit of your background growing up. How did you get into it? What kind of stirred the fire for you?
So I think like a lot of people, it was passed down from generations. My dad took us and gave us our first step. So my dad wasn't a big archery hunter, so we just focused on rifle season, and my dad would take us out for fall turkey season. At that time in my life, it was just something we did. We had a camp. We still have the camp. It's been in our name for 65 years.
Oh, so cool.
It's just been something we did every weekend. And I did that every weekend. And then before I was married, I was actually like a single bachelor because my wife and I were in different states. So until I was about 23, 24 years old, I was able to do whatever I wanted. So like I hunted 7 days a week. You know what I mean? I went to camp every weekend, all that stuff. And I just caught the bug. So like, my dad always said he doesn't realize the monster he was creating, because when we were 12, 13, 14, everything was about gun. And all of a sudden, my uncle got us introduced to archery at about 15, and we just ate it up. And we caught the disease, and it just, you know what it is. When you get that first passionate day in the woods where you're getting deer 10 yards away and they're not running and things like that, and next thing you know, we just took it and ran with it. And it's been a blessing, but it's also been a curse at the same time, because we've had to learn, because we were so passionate about it, we had to learn how to not create it as an idol. And we did for a long time. We hunting was our idol, and and we put it first before everything in our life. And, but because of that day with my dad and all that time, my fondest memories were never killing anything. And I think a lot of us can say that. My fondest memories were sitting on a log with my dad, no trail cameras, nothing like that, eating a squished salami sandwich in our backpacks and just talking.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of our fondest memories, is just the time you got to spend with loved ones or family or friends in the woods, and you just hung out.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You make me think back about some of my early childhood, and that's it. I mean, you remember those stories about the deer that you were able to get and some of those
Absolutely.
Fun things,
yeah.
But yeah. It's that camaraderie, that time together, the fun, you know, being with family and friends. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just going to ask, you know, whenever you think back about those times, whether it was with a bow or with a gun, is there any story that does stand out to you, whether you got something or not? Is there any certain story that just kind of rises to the top as like one of those like cherished Ooh. Hunts?
Yeah. You always have those first. Like my man room, I call it, which is now the toy room, but I have all these deer heads, and every one is not the biggest deer, but they're all a special story. And I have a hard time not getting things mounted that don't have meaning to it. And so I can look around right now and I can see all these stories, whether it's out of state stories, whether it's traveling with a buddy driving all night. But I have this one deer that's a half rack, that is a half rack 4-point. That's nothing special. But it was 3 years ago, and it was the first deer after I lost my dad from battling cancer. Mm-hmm. And it hit home because, again, like I told you, I have learned so many lessons these last 5 or 6 years with God and just the outdoors and everything, that it was one of those lessons that said, Brad, like, you need to quit worrying about inches and numbers and worrying about why you got into this. And it's a passion. You know what I mean? We're men. We're created to go out into the outdoors and hunt, you know what I mean? And we love doing it. And so November 12th on my own property, I own 72 acres with a couple friends. And, I was out in the tree stand and this buck comes walking in, and I'm not a very good gun hunter. I just never had luck in gun. So with the bow, I was like, you know what? I sat there for about 10 minutes watching him eat. And I told myself, I was like, Dad, what should I do? And next thing you know, I can just feel myself turning on the camera. And I'm like, Dad, what are we doing? My D loop, my release goes into my D loop. I'm like, Dad, are you sure about this? And I was like, because I mean, we still got time. We still got some season left. And then everything just took over. I pulled back the bow and I just released an arrow and I just cried, because the person that I wanted to call was not able to take my call. And that to me is like the one thing that I did my whole entire life, is the first person you call after you shoot a buck, is that person means so much to you. You know what I mean? So like, now my dad has been replaced with my brother. You know what I mean? So like my brother's my first person. So if you watch that video of the hunt, I didn't know whether to cry or puke, but I'm on the phone with my brother. Yeah. Like, and when you think about it, you don't even think about who you're calling. You just automatically dial that person.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the most memorable hunts that I've ever had.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Cause it's not like some big giant buck story. It's a, in the moment, a memory that stands out to you and being out there. That's awesome to me. Cause that's, I think what I value more than giant antlers or anything like that is the experience and the memories. You know, you look at each deer and I like what you said about the mounts. Cause it's like, I mean, if I get like a real big buck, I'll probably get it mounted, but this year's buck wasn't necessarily like a giant by any means that I got, but it was the culmination of several years of me trying to learn how to scout, me trying to get into spots where I can just put myself in a good position. And several hunts this year, I was pretty close to that. It just didn't pan out. And then November 3rd, you know, it just, that's part of the reason I got that deer mounted. It wasn't about the rack. It was about that experience and what all led up to it. So I totally identify. And man, there's so many guys right now that are probably a little teary eyed thinking about who they wish they could call. Cause that just, that hits, man. You know, I lost my dad in 2018 as well. And I'm always thinking about that. Like, I'd love to call and talk to him about those things. And, you know, the neat thing is I do think he can kind of see some of those good moments. I think he can look down, and, you know, so I know there's a sense in which he's there, but that's for awesome. Sure. Well, I wanted to kind of dive in to the story surrounding your biggest buck to date, which just happened this year. So kind of lead us into this season. What's going through your mind? Are you doing, you know, give us a little bit of your tactics behind it. Were you scouting trail cams, that kind of thing? Did you know this buck? Kind of lead us up to that hunt.
So I would say that for the last few years before I started to get into podcasts and wanting to learn, I was a very convenient hunter. I mean, I hunted hard. Don't get me wrong. I did everything I possibly could during the off season. But I was a very convenient hunter where if I had the choice of walking a mile or going to my lock on, I was going to my lock on because I would just assume that it would pay off. Mm-hmm. So the last 3 years, we have totally changed because 1 year we all got together and we're like, we have to change. Like we have to change what we're doing if we want to be successful. And there's different definitions of successful, but to us, successful means in Pennsylvania, killing 3.5, 4.5 year old deer for us in Pennsylvania. To me, that's a trophy, whether it's 90 inches or not. If he's 4.5, he survived and saw some many things, you know what I mean, in his lifetime. So to hunt a deer on that caliber, you just can't keep doing the same thing over and over. Because I tell my kids at school, kids, if we just keep doing the same thing, that's the definition of insanity is going and doing the same thing, but never seeing a different result. And then it kind of clicks. And I'm like, well, that's what I'm doing in hunting right now. You know what I mean? I'm going to places like this. So 3 years ago, what we did is we run 102 trail cameras now, and we just kept buying trail cameras. And we listened to a podcast one day about soaking the trail camera. So half of our cameras, we never check for 8 months out of the season. We let them soak. The patience in that is rewarding because now at the end of the year, we have historical data on spots that we never check to say, okay, we now know that this area gets hot at this time. In Pennsylvania, I truly believe that I, on my 72 acres, I cannot hunt one specific buck. And I've learned that. I've come to grips of reality. That buck might not survive another year. So I have a book of data that the first thing we wanted to do was start collecting data. And that was our first step. Let's collect data. Let's do this. So after the first year of running trail cameras, we broke down the data. We have spreadsheets. We have all this. And we just ate it up. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Christmas going to check a camera in February and be like, okay, let's go see 8 months of just went on. And so we write down all the data, have all this. So the first thing that's changed for me is now for quality instead of quantity, as a father and stuff, it's hard as the kids get older is what areas get hot and when do they get hot and let's go hunt them while they're hot. You know what I mean? So that's one thing that's changed. And then from there, because we own our own property, that has always been a dream. My dream was always to get my dad a deer off my own property. I never had the chance because he couldn't at the end of his illness. So when we broke ground and all this, we have learned so much in the last 4 years of just, I mean, we can listen to podcasts, but every property is different. So a lot of ours is just hit and miss learning. And we truly messed up our first 2 years of what to plan and all that. Well, these last 2 years, we now have gotten into like architect style food plots. bedding, things like that. And we, on our property this year, had three sits and had three kills of bucks 3.5 years or older. And again, no giants, but to us, that is more rewarding than 150 inch deer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just special. Yes. And that's special. So going into this, I hunt PA, but I also, my wife is from Northwest Ohio. So we ran trail cameras out there. Same thing. We don't get out there very much. So when we get to check those trail cameras, they're almost like 10 months soaking.
Oh,
and
wow.
So 3 years ago, we got this one. We use Tascos because they're inexpensive and they work really well. They're like $30. So for our regular cameras that soak, we use the Tascos. And we had 8 Tascos out on this one property that I get to hunt. The landowners are awesome people. I've been hunting out there for 12 years. And if you know Northwest Ohio, it is patches of woods.
Mm-hmm.
If the corn's up, it could be very frustrating. You know what I mean? And so we've learned how to adapt to that the last 3 years and 4 years of stuff. So 3 years ago, I got this picture of this buck and he was all over the cameras. And again, until we ran all these cameras, we never realized that deer do survive. We just think they get shot. So first year we get a picture of him, we get like 20, 30 pictures of him in the month of November. And we're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Then all of a sudden the next year we go and I said, you know what? I want to kind of start to focus. You know what I mean? And I don't mean this by any means, trust me, because I don't like when people say this. I did not hunt him. You know what I mean? I wasn't just after him. I would take any buck that was mature coming into me. So, but I kept tabs on him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So last year, opening day would put him at 4.5, possibly 5.5. I think he was 4.5 last year. And opening day, we went out because there was a cold front coming. And I had a stand set up to kind of do what I wanted to do with it. And when I went to it, I was doing it because, again, any mature deer I would take. Well, wouldn't you know it, the first buck I see on the field at 5:30 opening day is him. And I was like, holy cow. And so I got to see him. I got to film him. And I just got to witness like my first true buck that I knew from the previous year. I got to see that he survived. So stoked about it, everything like that. And I got one trail cam picture of him last year. And it's crazy because he was so so in front of the camera the year before that last year I got one picture of him. I saw him and I got one picture of him, but I knew he survived. And then going into this year, he had a distinct mane on his back. So this summer, when I put the trail cameras out, I saw his mane. So I knew he survived going into this year. So which put him at 5.5, 6.5 years old.
Okay, cool.
And then again, not hunting him, but I had all these plans like we do to go out there. And wouldn't you know it, it either didn't work out. So my first trip out to Bryan, or out to, Northwest Ohio, Bryan, Ohio, we call it, it's where my wife's from, is I wanted to go out opening day. Well, because I do production on the side, I do weddings. I had a wedding, I had someone back out on me so that I had to stay there. So I didn't get good out there opening day. So I was going to go out Columbus Day weekend as a teacher. I have Monday off, go 3-day weekend. Something comes up, didn't go out. So I'm like, my goodness. I was like, God, I mean, anytime I'd love to be able to do this. So, you know what I mean? Cause when you're, it's about you and you have it in your mind that you're going, you think you're going. Well, life has humbled me many times these last few years when I think like that. So again, normally I'm out there 2 or 3 times. My first trip wasn't until November 15th this year. So,
That's late.
Oh, eating me up. But I will tell you, the one thing I've learned these last 5 years is I love November 19th or 26th. I love November 19th, 26th. And my data shows November 19th and 26th out in Ohio there. It just is another monster. During the rut, you get the rut activity, all that. But if the corn's up, it could be, I mean, last year I went and didn't see a deer for like 3 days. So, I need the corn down. And when the corn's down, they have to go in the woods. So again, I get there November 15th, nothing. I get, check some cameras and he's on him. So I know he's around. And then I told my wife, I was like, listen, if you're okay with this, I'd love to go back Monday and Tuesday before Thanksgiving, go do a 3.5 day hunt. And then I'll come home for Thanksgiving and I'll go back out for gun. So I take my personal days off of school. And as I'm driving out, I think it was 11:30. I get his picture next to my stand. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I knew he was down. And then when that happens, and you know the corn's down. Like I knew the, because they were still standing corn in November 15th when I went. And then when I saw his picture in daylight, I was like, okay, the corn has to be down. So yeah. As I pull in, it's about a 4-hour drive. I see all cut cornfields. And I was like, okay. I was like, then all of a sudden you get that knot in your stomach and you're like, it could happen any day now because they have to be in the woods. So I had a plan to I have this spot that just from 12 years of data there, it's so flat out there that they could do whatever they want. Like when I watched your hunt and you had that ridge with the scrapes, we don't have, you know what I mean? Like it is flat. So they can go from A to B zigzagging anywhere they want. There's no funnels. There's nothing like that.
Yeah, so that is, so my wife is from Northern Ohio, Northeast, okay. And her dad owns a farm. And I tell you, me trying, there's a little bit of contours and a little bit of hills, but not much at all. And it's, man, it's taken me a long time to even figure out how to kill a doe on that property. Cause 100%. it's just like, there's 100%. Just little weird ways that they travel and trying to pattern is extremely difficult. Yep.
So I listened to a podcast, a gentleman talking one time about picking the perfect tree. And I sat there. So again, the one thing that I could say that I'm solid at myself and I'm giving myself credit is I've learned how to take data and use my math skills to calculate like angles. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I would go back and I can remember all my hunts. So for the last 12 years, about 2 years ago, I stayed up one night and I just thought of every mature buck that I saw, what it was doing and where did I see it at? And I graphed an area on my aerial maps to say, okay, in this area right here is where every mature buck either was going, coming, tending a doe, chasing a doe, got spooked and ran this way. And I was like, this is the area I need to be in. So then from that area, I went last year and scouted. And I said, if the sign tells me what I want it to say, then I know that I'm in the right spot. You know what I mean? Like, cause mm-hmm. I think like if you look at a map and if that map lines up if the data in the map line up with the sign, then that is a spot that you need to hunt. You know what I mean? Like that is a spot that says there needs to be a stand here. So last year I went in, and when I went in, I found scrapes and rubs. And then from there, I found the tree that kind of gave me a radius of 50 to 60 yards. And I said, okay, this is probably the closest I can get. Because I tell the guys this, I was like, I can inch 20 feet, 20 yards every day, and I can be out of the game every single day. You know what I mean? Like, if you see one thing here and you try to inch closer, then it's going to happen 50 yards behind you the next day. It's just the way it is. So when I found this tree, I said, I'm going to stick a stand here, and I am just going to use this stand to hunt on certain times, but this is the tree I need to be in. And so go out. November, I think it was 21st, I get back out there. I got his picture the 20th and 21st I'm hunting. So I go in there and same thing. I see a couple deer 50 yards away. I have does 20 yards away, and I'm sitting there and I'm just scratching my head all morning because that's what you do during the rut. You're like, okay, if it ain't happened, you're like, okay, I should have been here. I should have went here. I need to do this. And you just brainstorm while you're in the tree stand all day. And so before lunchtime, I said, you know what? This is where I need to be. I'm going to stay here and I'm just going to do that. And so I learned how, and that's another thing. I don't know if when you hunt your farmhouse property and stuff, you can't get in and out very easy when it's flat and wide open.
Right.
So I had to learn which spot to come in on the farm so that I don't spook the least amount of deer during daylight, because you can't get to a lot of little patch woods and not spook deer. So we purchased e-bikes about 3 years ago. And I'll tell you right now, that's the best thing I've ever bought. Because now it has allowed me to enter and exit any way I want to on a farm and not complain about going 2 miles out of my way.
Right.
So with that e-bike, I was able to come in on the south, and I've learned that the south allows me to have a 100-yard walk to my stand and spook the least amount of deer. And so I got down for lunch and I came back in. And so when I came back in, I just said, you know what? I was like, God, you have put me in this place at this time. I'm trusting in you. If it doesn't happen, I can care less. But I just said, I'm so grateful for the opportunity that my wife was okay and that the family was okay, that I can just come out here and have a couple of days to just be in my sanctuary. You know what I mean? Like that time of just like peace and quiet and just enjoying what everything God created. So I was content with everything going on. I saw like 9-10 deer that morning. So now fast forward, it's like 3:00. I went from, hey God, I'm okay with whatever goes on, to I'm in the most intense battle of my life, because at 3:00, I see him for the first time in a year and a half almost, and he's with the doe. And I, first thing I did was I put the binoculars up and I text at my, the group that we have, and I said, it's him. And again, I'm not hunting him, but I just knew that he was around.
Yeah.
And so when you lay eyes on him, camera's on, the GoPro's on, everything's running now. And I'm like, okay, he's only about 90 yards away. And this is the closest I've ever been to him. So at one point I just remember saying, you know what? I'm going to hang the bow up and I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this whole opportunity. So I filmed and through the binoculars, just watched him. I watched him bed down. I watched him make rubs. I watched him come towards me, come away from me. I watched him never take his eyes off this doe and chase off three or four bucks. So for the next hour and a half, I was just not in stomach, but yet, and you know this too, as an older gentleman hunter, all this now, as I should say, as a veteran, you're in straight kill mode. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like
yeah.
when you're locked in, and it's what I, everybody's like, how do you not shit? I'm like, as an adult now, you go into kill mode, and you can rejoice later, but you're there for one reason. That one reason is to execute your plan. So,
So
I'm in straight kill mode now. Like I'm good. I know that if he comes in, I'm ready for him. So I'm watching him for an hour and a half, and I'm just enjoying this whole process because I truthfully have never seen tending and fighting off bucks. It's not like we get to enjoy that all the time. So,
right.
So I'm just taking it back and enjoying the time. So finally, he chases off these two bucks, comes back to his doe, and they start coming towards me.
Mm.
And so as they start coming towards me, I'm just sitting there. I was like, God, if this happens, that's awesome. If not, I've just got to watch him for an hour and a half, and that's just as good. And I promise you, I said that, you know what I mean? I'm not just saying that to blow smoke. I promise you, I said that because I was content. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And so she started hanging towards me, and for some reason he broke off of her, and there was a brush pile about 40 yards away from me. She stayed to the east of the brush pile. He tried to swoop around the west. And when he went to swoop around the west, he got closer to me. So by this time, the camera is just zoomed out. You know what I mean? You know how it is. Like you zoom it out, mm-hmm. you try to catch everything, and you don't care anymore. You're just like, okay, this is going to happen. I got a GoPro on my bow. So I'm able to catch everything with the GoPro on my bow too. So at this point, I'm just like, so I'm locked in, and I've been watching hunt videos where I see guys pulling back real early. And I was like, I always told myself, you know what? I'm going to do that. So as soon as he started coming towards me, he was like 47 yards away. I pulled back and I was like, I'm just going to sit here and wait till he gives me this first opportunity. Well, he kept coming and coming, and then he slightly went, which would be my north. It would have been north. And as he went north, he went broadside. So I'm already pulled back. And again, pulling back early allowed me to just pick my spot and find my spot and then let's settle the pin. It didn't happen quick. You know what I mean? Like sometimes when things happen quick, you just get caught up in the moment.
Right.
So I was able to settle. And then when he gave me that opening, I just remember, and I can remember everything, settling the pin, let it sit there and just releasing. And then once it hit him, he made this loud, I should say, like roar. And I just went berserk. I didn't know whether to puke, whether to cry. So it was like a half puke cry came out of my mouth. And then I didn't realize what I got on video. And then when I got home that night and I saw everything, I was like, Lord, I just pray that you use this platform to talk to people about Jesus and what you did for me in my life. And then that's how the rest of the video went. I mean, it just happened natural that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love your reaction afterwards. I mean, you know that you made a good shot, right? Like,
yeah,
cause
yeah.
You immediately are like, you're celebrating. Cause as his ears running away, you know that it's a kill shot.
Cause he fell three times within like 15 yards. So like,
okay,
I use the same broadheads for 12 years. They've adapted. I use Rage. I'm not spawning. I mean, I just use Rage because I've never had a bad thing with them. And so I've switched to the two blade, the tri-pan, the no collar. And I go with it. And then when I hit him and what I saw and everything like that, I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you call your brother?
Yeah. So my first call is always Brian now. So it was Dad. Now it's Brian. And I call Brian. And if you hear him on the phone, all you hear me say is he's down. And you hear my brother like, are you serious? And again, when you catch it on video, it's just, I can't tell you. And you understand how many times you take that gear out. You never see a deer. The hassle in it, everything like that.
Yeah.
But I can't stop filming. Like I can't go in the woods. I feel naked if I don't have my film gear anymore.
Yeah, I'm the same way, man. It is sometimes such a hassle. Now, I have upgraded my gear and gotten it to be a little less heavy this year.
100%.
And tried to go a little bit lighter. My buddy Jeremy Riggin has a nice camera.
You know Jeremy? I got that too. Yeah.
It's so awesome. That lightweight, you know, and I've learned to get it locked down to the tree pretty good. And so, I mean, that's been great and got another, but it's just, I like what you talked about this year. Before I killed my buck this year, I had somebody on the podcast. I don't remember who, but we talked about going into kill mode.
Yeah.
And that's something that I honestly, I've struggled with over the years. I've had issues where I focus too much on the camera or I get shook up. Yeah. I've made some dumb choices. And so I feel like I've gotten better over that. Part of that is shooting some does and filming that 100%. And taking my time. But I had an opposite experience with my buck that came in. I had about, from the time I saw him to the time I shot him, it was probably less than 15 seconds.
Yeah,
it was just like corner my eye. He's walking in, point the camera, draw back, stop him, shoot. I mean, that was it. I mean, and try and decide in that amount of time, is he a shooter? And in my mind, he was. So it's just like, but in that moment, I remember being in control. It wasn't like, I hope I hit this deer, or it was like, point the camera. I'm not worried about the camera anymore. I got to kill this deer, and then draw back, focus in, put it on the shoulder and let it go. And, you know, and that's probably what felt the best about that. Is like, I was pretty sure, pretty confident about the shot. Wasn't 100% sure, but just felt good. And it's just, it's awesome to have those moments where you're like, it's what you, whenever you can snap into that mode. And then the bonus is, hey, you look back at your footage and you actually got it on tape. That's a really cool part.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, with what you're saying there too, if you want to relate it to our faith, is that growing up, when things get crazy and you lose, and like I like how you said, control of the moment, that's when we let things in. You know what I mean? As men, as our family, I tell our family, friends, and the guys that we're involved in, and when I go speak and stuff, I say we are the gatekeepers of our house. And if we let things into our gate, we're letting things into our kids. We're letting things come in through TV, through radio, through anything like that. And it's our job as men is to be in control of that gate, so that we need to stay on our A game, but also at the same time, understand that as head of households, we need to make sure that our kids are seeing a good example through us. We don't want, I always tell this to my buddies, I don't want to be the reason that my son or daughter's innocence was taken away because of what something I did.
Yeah, man, that is so good, Brad. I tell you, that hit me really hard over Thanksgiving. We were up at my in-laws, and I got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and they're all about watching their little kid shows and stuff like that. And we try and limit their iPad and how much time and stuff, but I don't watch every single show that they watch and lean over their shoulder. And all. I try and make sure it's nothing, you know, PG or anything like that. It's G-rated stuff for those kids. But they were watching a brand new, and I mean, I'll just say it for guys, it was a brand new version of the Power Rangers. I grew up, loved the Power Rangers. And we're sitting there just enjoying Thanksgiving stuff, and the kids are watching that. We were all just kind of playing on our phones while the kids were watching their show before they go to bed. And all of a sudden, I start to listen. My wife's like, are you picking this up? And there is, you know, there is two characters that are homosexual on the show.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to go and be anti or anything like that, but I'm just saying my faith and where I believe, that's not something I'm wanting my kids to be exposed to and me have to explain right off the bat. And it was just one of those things that I had never watched the show with them, never seen any of that type of thing. And I'm like, man, at the very least, I need to start looking into these shows and try and understand what is the culture trying to influence on my kid. And what 100%. Am I, like you said, gatekeeper, what are you letting in? Cause that just hit me hard that I was unaware of that, you know, and didn't know. So yeah, right on, man. I'm with you on that.
Sorry to feed off that a little bit, is just with buddies that are coming into faith and stuff, the main thing is we've all made mistakes, you know what I mean? But it's never too late to start being that gatekeeper. You know what I mean? Things have happened already. Your kids have seen things. We all make mistakes. So let's start locking that gate now. And then from there, we can work on things with our kids as we progress. But my pastor said one time, he said, when you look around society, God must have a great plan for our kids because the devil was really trying to get to them. You know what I mean? Through shows like that. So
yeah,
we're always praying for our kids and we're always praying for safety and everything for them.
Yeah. Well, man, I loved your video. I loved the end where you kind of wrapped up and kind of tied in your faith and you get your hands on this big old buck. I mean, he was a big bruiser, it looked like.
He was, yeah, yep, for sure.
So I wanted to ask you a question because I mean, I know you being a person of faith, just wanted to ask you a question about you mentioned before when you're sitting in that stand and you're in your sanctuary, and it's just kind of like this time where you can just relax. And I think that's the case for a lot of guys. If a person said to you, Brad, like, you know, ch the tree stand is my church, or church is my tree stand, what's your response to that? How, because I've heard a lot of guys say that, and we've talked a little bit about it on the show before. I'm just curious, how would you respond to that?
So I would 100% say that I was at that point years ago. I wouldn't question skipping church to go hunt Ohio. I wouldn't do anything that. And my response was, well, I'm going to go spend time with God. And the one thing I've learned growing closer in my relationship with Jesus Christ is we like to twist things and manipulate things to make sure that we're not feeling guilty for what we do, because I've done it many times. And yeah, I would go spend time, but I'll tell you this right now, if I was in my tree stand for 12 hours, I wasn't focusing on God for 12 hours. And the one thing that I've learned is if I'm going to that tree stand, I'm making sure that I am doing my devotionals. I'm making sure that I am making my tree stand, let's say your church. But what I have learned through studying in scripture is what am I doing God's purpose if I'm only keeping the church to me and my tree stand? And what I mean by that is I believe our purpose as human beings is we all have free will. God has given us free will to choose. We can choose him and choose his path for us that's predestined and predetermined for us. Or we could choose our own path, and he gives us free will. I have learned that my path is not better than his path. You know what I mean? And it's taken a lot of lessons, a lot of humbling. So I've also learned that our job as Christians, and when you accept his path, is to create disciples, to tell people about Jesus. And if I keep that tree stand as my church and my church only, I feel that I'm letting people around me down by not sharing Christ with the people around me. So what my church has changed its name the last few years, and it is called Family Life Church. And since we've changed our name and adapted our, let's say, our atmosphere at our church, I feel like when I go in on Sundays, I'm related to everybody there. You know what I mean? And if I'm not there on that Sunday, I feel that I'm not seeing my brother, my sister, my brothers and sisters in Christ. You know what I mean? Like saying hi to everybody and just fellowshipping with everybody. And that's what this is all meant to be. This is all meant to not hold it in and keep it to yourself. We're supposed to have our relationship between Jesus and us, but at the same point, we're supposed to share Jesus with everybody we can around us. Because the overall goal, I don't know how you feel, is I want to see everybody go to heaven. I mean,
Yeah,
that's the
man.
whole reason Jesus came back, is to get everybody to go to heaven. So if we're not doing it, then who is? You know what I mean? So I fell under that stigma of church is my tree stand's my church. But now there's more to this relationship than that. You know what I mean? There's more to God and what this is about than just doing it in my tree stand.
Man, that's I agree so much with that. And I think that's it, because it's like, yeah, that time in your tree stand, that can be great devotional time. It's a great time to decompress and stress. I think what's happening is maybe it's a reaction. I think some people that don't go to church, or maybe they grew up in a bad kind of church where it was just strict rules and just every single, you know, time they had to be there was a drag or something like that. Maybe that was their experience. And they see people going to church, and their view of it is people just go to church so that they can be closer to God. Well, I can be closer to God in a tree stand. And I
Yeah,
think
that's a great
if
point.
that's how you look at church, then that's how I can understand that. But I don't think that that's what, like you said, that's not the point of church. Church isn't meant to be Sunday morning at 10 a.m. once a week. Church is meant to be a people. It's meant to be a family. Sunday a.m. is just a time for us just to get together, and it's just convenient because people are off work and we can just get together, and people set that time aside just to come together and worship. But church is meant to be family. It's meant to be life shared with people. And so if I'm in a tree, like you said, I completely identify with that, because it's like I think God recently for me has been like, what are you doing? Are you doing the last thing Jesus told you to do before you left the planet? And the last thing Jesus told his disciples is go and make disciples. Yep. And teach them everything that I've commanded you. Like that's what Jesus told. He did not say, go to church.
Yeah, right. 100%. 100%.
So for me, I think that's the reaction that people have. And I would challenge guys a little bit. If you're not a church going type, maybe it's what's your family? Who's your family? Do you have a church family? That's the bigger question. You know, I think to look at, and like you said, are you doing what God asked you to do? Are you reaching out to people? You know,
it's funny because when you start digging in, you find out that a lot of things are man-made. You know what I mean? A lot of things that customs that we do are not in the Bible. They're man-made. Yeah. And the one thing I've learned is the 10 commandments are great rules to follow. The 10 commandments aren't getting me to heaven. You know what right. I mean? There's only one way to heaven, and that is through Jesus Christ, having a relationship with Jesus Christ. So, and what I told my buddy who just recently devoted his life to Christ, and it's been an awesome this past year doing this journey with him, is once you devote your life to Christ, it's like a waterfall. Everything else is going to fall into place. But if I just worry about following rules, because that's what the rules say not to break, then I'm losing my whole focus on what were purposes for us being here on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. I really appreciate that. I was going to ask you this too. So what do you do? You talk about that, but what do you do to kind of pass on this passion, maybe not just of your faith, but also like of archery, of hunting, that kind of thing. Right. Is there anything that you do in specific that just kind of is passing that on to others?
Yeah, for sure. So when we first were blessed with our property 4 years ago, we use our property to take kids hunting. So there've been a lot of kids, a lot of grownups who've shot their first deer on our property. And that is a blessing. You know what I mean? That is a blessing. And it's been a blessing because we were able to set our property up so that we have stands that we can hunt 30 times in a row because we can get in and out undetected. So it's been a great thing for kids. And our purpose for Driven Purpose Outdoors is what you just brought up. And it's our Bows and Donuts program. So God, we had started a Bows and Bibles program and for adults, and it came in and out and it just wasn't feeling right. So God put it on my heart to bless and try to bless as many kids as we can. So as a teacher, I went to my boss and I said, listen, I would really like to do this, but I know I got to change the name being at a public school. So I changed Bows and Bibles to Bows and Donuts. And what it is it's funny how God brought things together because someone gave me a guy's name. I called this gentleman and he's like, we're looking to start a youth program. And I said, well, I have a youth program. I need targets and bows. He's like, we have targets and bows. We just need kids to come. And I said, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? And so it's funny how God puts people in your lives. So through this sportsman's club and this gentleman, we started Bows and Donuts. So starting in May, June, July, August, and September, once a month, kids from different school districts come to this sportsman's club. We have 72 donuts. I get 72 donuts, get some cookies. Prizes, and we just shoot at 3D targets. And so after we shoot at 3D targets for about an hour, we pop balloons. I would tell you this right now. If you put a balloon on a target, 90 kids are going to shoot that balloon, and they just have a blast trying to pop it. So my daughter and son come, and they shoot their bows once in a while, but they just love helping. So, like, the gift of God is on their hearts because my daughter is – just not involved right now with a lot of outdoor stuff. She'll do it, but like whatever, but she wants to go to help. So she'll go blow balloons up the whole entire time and just talk to kids and things. So it's been a great, like I said, Driven Purpose has done so much more for me and my family that I could ever do for Driven Purpose. And it's just changed. And so Bows and Donuts is a way for us to pass the sport of archery down, pass hunting down, but also at the end of every night, we do a devotional before we give the prizes. And I was very nervous to do it because as a public education person, I don't know how people are going to respond. Yeah. So the first night we did it, I'm sitting there and I'm just like, God, I was like, this could go two ways. So you put it on my heart. So let's do this. So there's about 40 kids and the parents stayed, and I wasn't expecting the parents to stay so close. So I go through the message and then you knew God was in charge because afterwards they all were like, we needed to hear that. You know what I mean? Like our kids need to hear that. And the response was so positive that I said, okay, this is what we're doing. And so we're going to be on year three of Bows and Donuts. Mm-hmm. Driven Purpose puts on a game dinner. We call it a sportsman's night out. So if anybody is in Pittsburgh area, Hermitage area, March 4th is our sportsman's night out at our church. We sell 400 tickets and it's geared towards families. So we have prizes for kids, prizes for adults, prizes for women. There's good food there, but the money is that we do get, we don't get very much, but the money we do get, we have now bought Bozeman. So we were blessed to buy our own 15 Bose. So we started Bose and Donuts, not only at my school, but at my church last year too. So it's awesome. It's growing. Yeah. So my production company, God has blessed my production company. So we use the money of the production company to buy the giveaways and all that stuff when we do Bose and Donuts. So again, everything is just, we don't ask for money because I think that's one thing that people don't come to church to hear, because it, when they come to church, it's all about, well, here, give us your money. And that's how people hear things. Yeah. So no money is ever asked for. We do it out of our own pockets. And it's just amazing because when you give God the money, you never miss it. Like you look at your bank account and you're like, oh, we're not missing anything. Meanwhile, we just spent $300 on prizes and shirts or whatever. And it's just, my weakness has always been the bank account. Like Satan knows how to get to me through the bank account. And God has taught me how to give it to him through this process. So Bose and Donuts has just been an awesome thing. And when you get to see 5 and 8 year olds come for the first time shooting a bow, and then they come back with a new bow because their parents are like, they can't stop talking about it. You just can't stop smiling. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's cool. Yeah. I love that type of thing. I think it's a good thing that you're doing. And I that's awesome. And maybe that encourages somebody out there, if you're listening, maybe an idea for you to try or something. But man, Brad, I enjoy talking to you. I love hearing your stories. I loved watching your video. I'd encourage guys to go over to Driven Purpose Outdoors on YouTube and check out your latest video there, because it's a good one. So, but man, I really appreciate you giving us some time tonight. Enjoyed chatting with you. And what's shaking up for the rest of the season for you?
So we are now straight in. I might have a hunt in Missouri. I normally go to Missouri for late season. And so that's on the table right now every late season, but there's some things coming up. And again, I'm just letting God guide me. So like before it was, I'm going, now it's like, we'll see how it goes. You know what I mean? And if my wife's okay, which she is, and God's like letting it be done, then I will go. But if not, then we'll stay home. And if I stay home, the conservationist side begins now. So we're going to start getting our supplement feed coming in. We're going to start our hinge cutting process. Our frost seeding in March, and just getting our property ready for next year, because our property isn't a beast style property. Our property gets deer shot because of the work that goes in the other 9 months.
Right.
And then we never touch it. We barely hunt it because you don't need to, you know what I mean? But then at the same point, we have properties that we can go scout every day, hunt every day, and do beast style tactics to get on a deer. So we have a little bit of both between a lease that at my camp and the property that I own. So no matter what the one thing that has changed for us is we do a lot of scouting January, February, March. And I will tell you right now, that is the best time to scout, because that prepares you for like the scrapes, the rubs, and then if it lines up to the cameras and the historical data, you now know that this time frame you need to be in this area.
Mm-hmm. That's good, man. Well, good luck with all that. That's awesome. I love that. I think, I completely agree. I think getting out there, I learned that a couple of years. It took me this long to realize it, but those times whenever you can get out there, whenever it's March, you can also do some shed hunting while you're out there and do some scouting. That's a great time to be in the woods. So.
Yeah. And then you can just hang out with your buddies and just have some time together with the kids and go for walks and stuff. You get the hunting atmosphere, but at the same point you get to just enjoy each other.
That's good. Well, Brad, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate carving out some time tonight, and I'll definitely stay in touch, and thanks 100%. For coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate everything. God bless everybody.
You too. Great episode. Loved hearing from Brad. Man, the guy's got a passion for hunting, passion for the Lord, and I just appreciate him sharing that. Guys, I want to thank you for coming back for another episode. Hope you'll come back next time. Once again, if you ever want to come on, tell the stories. Not looking for professional storytellers or professional hunters, just everyday average Joe hunters that love to go out and would want to share a story. Send me an email, sheddinglightod@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. And until next time, remember to shed the light.